Welcome to another episode of the Identity Theft Warriors, your frontline defense against identity theft. We're all about prevention. To find out more, go to keepmyid.org. Use the code FSN2 and you can get started now. Welcome to another episode of the Identity Theft Warriors, the place where you'll learn how to keep your identity safe from would-be thieves from all over the world.
And we're talking about investing and staying away from the scams. They're proliferating at an incredible rate. You'll hear more about that later. Got Heather Wagenhals on with us now. Heather, welcome back. How are you?
I'm getting better and better every day. Thanks for asking.
Well, it's always good to hear that. And hey, met your associate, Carrie, at a investing conference, real estate investing, Jason Hartman's Meet the Masters out in California. And just obviously sponsor of my show. And, you know, but you know, real estate, people have gotten so burned on it. It's almost a disfavored investing class at this point, but you and I kind of feel similar about it, don't we?
Well, you know, I actually have always been a fan of real estate investment, and I feel it's unfortunate that folks are down on it, and it's only because they either went in without any information about what they were doing, and so they didn't understand the pitfalls enough to capitalize on the successes that are out there, or they knew what was going to happen in the marketplace and just went forward anyway because greed took a hold and drove them to make ineffective decisions.
Yeah, and they were viewing their own home. You know, you look at your own home as an investment, and how wise is that?
It's not, because, and that's probably the first rule of investing, is you don't get to count your primary residence as an investment. It's where you live. And that money you're spending on a mortgage is the same amount of money or less than what you'd be spending on rent. And so from a housing perspective, you know, you don't buy a home to invest in it. You buy it to live in it and enjoy it. And you make your house a home. And the investment becomes more emotional than financial when it comes to primary residence. And I define an investment property as one that generates income. And unless you're charging every family member rent, we're not really capitalizing on that being an investment property.
Yeah, but great point there. And so many of you out there bought more home than you could afford because you said, oh, well, I'll sell it, I'll refinance it, and it's going to appreciate at way beyond the rate of inflation. So just by living in the home, you're effectively making money. And as you found out all too well, that turned out not to be the case. The trend, as many of my investment professionals that you hear on the show say, the trend will always revert back to the mean. And unfortunately, with housing prices, it did that with a vengeance. But that's where the opportunity is now, right?
In some markets, that's where the opportunity is. And what we have to remember, I think the first rule of investing on any investment, whether it's precious metals or commodities, stocks, bonds, or real estate, you always make your money on the buy. You don't make it on the sell. And so you have to imagine or decide before you invest how much you want to make on it. And you've got to make that money at the buy, not the sell, because you don't know what the market's going to do. And because you don't know what the market's going to do, that's why you have to buy under the market when you do buy, so you can capitalize or lock in your profit at that point.
Yeah, that's such a great point, is that you make the money on the buy because you got a good deal and you were smart on the buy, and then the sell just is where you actually realize the profit, where you actually get the cash. And, you know, when you're buying for cash flow, you know, generally you're not going to get this extraordinary return on the sell. You're making it all along by renting it out, getting the cash flow, And, you know, with the exception of these crazy markets like New York City, like Miami Beach, like Los Angeles, you know, places like that, you know, you just don't see these insane returns and, you know, you don't see these crazy capital gains, but you see a nice, like at the conference I was at, people are realizing 10%, 12% cash on cash returns. Where else, Heather, in this current investment climate, can you really do that?
Well, with the exceptions of loan sharking, nowhere I know.
And loan sharking, last time I looked, was against the law, and you can get into serious trouble in that.
Exactly. You know, here's what I think is so appealing to me about real estate as an investment, and I prefer residential real estate. And my theory behind that is that everybody needs a roof over their head. Not everybody needs a business or a storefront, but everybody needs a place to live. Okay. And so regardless of what the market is doing, if your property is safe, sound, and sanitary, you will have a tenant forever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's really what it's about. You have to maintain it, keep it clean, keep it safe, and, you know, make it a property that you yourself would live in, or, you know.
You don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. Yeah, that's a big no-no. Don't make it what you want to live in, because what if you have champagne taste on budget?
Exactly. I mean, I don't want to say put all granite countertops and high-end appliances, but, you know, in terms, not in terms of aesthetics, but in terms of safety and cleanliness and those factors, that's what you're looking at, right?
Yes, yes. You want to make it habitable for the person, you know, so you don't want them getting hurt on broken steps or things like that. You want to keep things up to code, and you will take care of your tenants, and you serve your tenants, and you'll have an income stream forever. And I think that's what people are misguided about. They don't understand the true value of real estate as an investment. If you put a dollar into anything, whether it's stocks, bonds, precious metals, you name it, you've sunk that money into it, okay? And so, like, if I have a dollar to invest, I'm going to invest it, and I'm going to earn a rate of return based on that $1. Okay. And so my interest and all of that stuff's going to be calculated with that if there's cash flow. So, like on bonds, if I put a dollar in bonds, I'm going to earn X percent in interest on that. But most assets that you buy with that dollar, you buy it whatever the market value is. And the only way to get money out of that is to sell it. But with real estate, I take my dollar, and then I can go leverage myself, and I can go borrow 8 more, and now I'm earning earning appreciation as well as cash flow at a rate almost 10 times what I had initially invested. So I invest a dollar of my own money, but I'm earning at the rate of 9, and that's where that cash on cash figure makes a difference.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's, you get the leverage. And if you buy in the right area where the demand is there for the real estate, and the other thing is, the millennials are a generation that isn't into buying, they're into renting. They saw their parents get foreclosed on, their aunts and uncles and friends. So you've got home ownership at lower than historic levels, and they're laden with all sorts of college debt. So they're going to be renting for a long time to come. So the factors, the market conditions are there for residential real estate for a long time into the future. So my way of thinking, it just makes a lot of sense. And then you've got the leverage that enables you to really get a higher return than on virtually anything out there now in the marketplace, except for really risky investments. And then we just saw in the marketplace, the junk bond market, which a lot of people fled to get higher returns, that got killed. And, you know, there's just not a lot of alternatives to get these outsized returns in the marketplace other than real estate, and everybody's saying, oh no, it's risky. But then you look at the prices of real estate in a lot of markets that were high flying, has totally been knocked down, still hasn't recovered. And in other markets that weren't high flying, like that Jason points out, places like Little Rock, Arkansas, Atlanta, Georgia, Birmingham, Alabama, they never got that inflated. And therefore, how risky are those markets to put in some money to? Probably not that risky at all, are they?
Well, if you think about it, you know, from an investor standpoint, regardless of what the value is, it doesn't matter, because if you have a tenant, you still have cash. If the market goes to heck in a handbasket and you still have a paying tenant, then how is that a problem for you? Because you're not liquidating the asset to make money. You don't need to sell that asset to make money. You just need to have that asset used. And that's kind of like misconception. And, you know, because of what I do with the brain-based financial literacy at Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I'd like to address your comment about the millennials. What a travesty it is that they watch their parents get burned in real estate, but not understand what precipitated that. They don't understand that their parents made ineffective decisions. Their parents were either, you know, dealing with fear or greed when they made their decision to either purchase or be to get foreclosed on. But they don't know the mechanics behind it. They just saw what happened and they made a judgment call based on their frame of reference. And so now they're thinking they're going to have a whole group of people that are coming up through the pipeline, which for investors, it'll be good because they'll have a regular stream for the next 15 years at least while they're paying out their student loans as tenants. That's the good thing about that mindset of the millennials. But what a shame that their parents' poor decision-making has negatively influenced their ability to create wealth for themselves.
Yeah, they really have taken away, I guess, the wrong lesson from the whole real estate crash. And that's the shame of it all, because, some of the best returns I've gotten, some of the best returns I've made have come from real estate. And my personal failing was I didn't really understand why I made those returns. So that was my failing there. But hopefully, I always like learning from other people's mistakes. And hopefully people, you'll learn from my mistakes as well. And, you know, it's just historically looking back in history, you know, I just look down here in Florida, like my friend, she's got a house in Palm Beach County here in 1962 or four when that house was built. It cost a grand total of maybe $12,000, and it's not in a great area. It's not in, you know, high income area of the county, because, you know, there's all sorts of wealth disparities in Palm Beach County. It's in an area that's strictly working class. Now that house is worth, before she fixed it up, it was worth $170,000. Now, with a minimum of work, and she bought it more to flip, but income also is there. Now that house is worth about $240,000. In less than a year, okay, bought it at a good price, not a real fire sale price, but a good price, and it makes sense on a cash flow basis, and also on the basis of flipping that property, and those deals are available to anybody there, and if you buy it with a mortgage to live in and fix up and then flip, great. Buy it with a mortgage to fix up and rent out, fine. But either way, that deal's available to anybody out there. You know, that's the amazing thing. It's really, all these deals are out there, Heather, you know?
Absolutely. And you just have to make the commitment to educate yourself. And I say that with caution, because we can overlearn and paralyze ourselves with learning too much and then not make the decision to move forward and get our feet wet. And so we need to educate ourselves so we feel comfortable with the industry, but always seek the advice of mentors or people who have been there, done that. Don't get Uncle Joe that lost his house and foreclosed.
Yeah.
It was really, he treated his house like an ATM machine and kept refining it to cash out. And that's why he was foreclosed on. You want to seek out people like, you know, Jason Hartman's been a serial guest on my show, and he's got some really great ideas for investing that if you want to be a player in real estate, but don't want to be a landlord, don't want to have to understand all the rules, you just have to find people like him. And you're fortunate to have him as a sponsor, to find people like him that will do the homework, that have a track record, that create this investor pool, and that can get you the returns that you deserve in real estate. And, you know, I mean, and that's the key, is to educate yourself, but don't be paralyzed by having to become a PhD in real estate investing, you know, and start small. Start with what you're comfortable with. You know, you don't have to start with single family homes. Flip a couple of condos or fix up and rent out condos. I mean, I remember when the market crashed here, I was picking up condos that could easily rent for $500 or $600 a month, and I was picking them up for like $10,000 and $15,000 a piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just the rental on them alone, probably with very little repairs, you know, you're getting an unbelievable return on your money. Yeah. So hey,
yeah, I paid my principal back before the year was out.
Yeah.
On some of these.
Yeah.
Just in the rental income alone.
Yeah.
You know, and I probably spent less than, you know, a couple $1,000 just fixing countertops and changing out carpet and tile, just cleaning the place out. I call them lipstick rehabs, where you just change the aesthetics, the paint, the tile, and the carpet. You know, and we just do a simple little thing. And so, you know, those deals are going to be really hard to find now because we're not experiencing the same market conditions. But, you know, you've got to watch things and time it right. But get in and get your feet wet. Try it. If you make a mistake and you lose money, don't do it again. But that doesn't mean don't invest again. Just try something different. Ask a mentor, what did I do wrong here? What did I do right here so I can keep doing what I did right again?
Yeah, exactly. Couldn't agree with you more. We're here with Heather Wagenhals, and the Verizon scam, it just keeps on propagating, doesn't it?
Yes, now there's Verizon37.com. There's, you know, it's just amazing to me because I'm not a Verizon customer, why they keep calling me with this. Let alone, I'm the one that's outing them on the internet. You would think that they would figure it out by now because I put the phone numbers and calls on my website and the website, like, detail what they're doing. You know, I just wish I had, like, that I could have on my studio line so that when they call in, I can capture it and play it for people on the show. That's the only thing I'm missing now with these guys.
Oh, man. They're just like, I get the one from the IRS all the time that they've got money for me, and I just have to call this other number, and they'll put it right in my bank account. They're so nice, you know? They're so good to me.
Well, the maestro of moolah, Michael Terry, actually, and we have it. We're going to put it on our on a show. Is we had the actual voicemail he received from the IRS saying that he was going to be arrested and if he didn't send us money. And it's really funny because they're trying to collect taxes on a state he doesn't live in, which is hysterical. You know, I mean, it's just, but these people, you know, they talk with authority and it sounds serious, you know, and like as soon as you hear IRS, I don't know about you, but that's not my favorite uncle.
No.
And so when I hear, you know, all of a sudden I'm having a physiological response, so we're not even listening at that point. We're having hormones bounce and we're like in prison or like floating through our heads, so we can't even see straight. But there's another scam out there that's growing in popularity that just started. And it started in your neck of the woods in Florida, as a matter of fact. And what happened now is that there are these people calling up saying that you have past tickets or an arrest or some sort of something hanging out with your local municipality and that you're going to be arrested if you don't go buy a Green Dot card.
A Green Dot card?
Yep, you go and you pay for it with one of those Green Dot cards, which is it's like a prepaid debit card.
And that's going to save you from being arrested, huh?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
And doing it. I mean, that's the thing that's so crazy.
Oh, man.
You know?
So what is a Green Dot card? What is a Green Dot card exactly? I've never heard of such a thing.
a green dot card is like a prepaid debit card. So like you can go get, you know, a prepaid Visa for somebody, you know, like if you wanted to, you know, give your kid money and you just go down to the local store, you can get them at Walmart and a lot of these big box retailers that resell these cards as a way to store money. And so, and the beauty of that is they're not traceable if you don't register them. So you go and you put the money on the card. And then once you give it to somebody, once they spend it, it's gone. I mean, and there's no way to get it back. You can see what they bought, but, you know, you don't know anything about them because, you know, we just walk up to the machine and swipe. And as long as the charge is approved, it goes through. And you know, what's interesting is I find that a lot of these scams like this are now starting to really originate in the Southeast. And I'm not sure if because that there's a stigma that that area of the country maybe is older. You know, you've got a lot of retirees in Florida and the Southeast that they're trying to take advantage of people's good nature, you know, and their desire to be right. But I mean, you would know if you didn't have a parking ticket, right?
Yeah, I would think. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, I would hope I'd know. Yeah.
Duty. You miss jury duty, and we're going to come arrest you if you don't give us a green dot card. But by the way, meet me around the corner, and I'll come get it from you in my, you know, costume rental police outfit.
Wow. I guess, you know, who was it? P.T. Barnum who said, or W.C. Fields, there's a sucker born every minute and two to catch him, right?
Exactly. Yeah, so we're working to catch them, that's for sure.
Wow, it's amazing. What will they think of next? Well, on that note, we got to run. Just tell us where we find you, how we connect with you on the internet.
For scammers, personal finance, and all things money, visit unlockyourwealthradio.com.
All right, and Heather, we'll talk with you again soon.
Okay, you make it a great day.
This has been another episode of the Identity Theft Warriors. To find out more, go to keepmyid.org and use the code FSN2 to get started now.